Check it, bro. I'm surfing with Fuse's new unbreakable glass bottle, bro.
That's actually Fuse's new plastic bottle, and there's a drink inside, bro. Fuse, vitamin and mineral-enhanced beverages infused with quality ingredients and exceptional taste. And now with its new plastic bottle, Healthy just got portable.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Here to break his all-time record for most BS Report appearances. Can you break your own record? Adam Carolla.
I'm going to break my own wind, and then I'm going for the record.
I think this is like your fifth time.
It's great to be back in studio.
Yeah, and as always, you're here to plug something.
Yeah. And by the way, when I say studio, I mean entry hall of Bill's house with the gardener and the leaf blower going in the background. Is there a rule? Because I feel like I'm 9 for 9 with the gardener and the leaf blower.
Yeah, for some reason, every time you show up, the leaf blower's his radar goes off.
I just assume you have a 24-hour gardener.
No.
Seven days a week, 24 hours, leaf blowing. You could literally eat off the driveway
They're
here.
They're here for like an hour. For some reason, it always coincides with their podcast. Yeah.
Gardeners and meter maids.
You know what's funny about living in L.A. is everybody has a gardener, but in other parts of the country, they're like, you have a gardener? What a snob. Well, but they don't realize that that's just the way it is here.
I think in other parts of the country, they look at gardening as a hobby, whereas we look at it as a chore.
Right.
You know, that's what you do. You go out on the weekends and you garden. Like in England, it's a big deal.
Your lawn
takes a certain amount of pride in taking care of his property. And
yeah,
for us, it's like feh.
Well, you also have a huge work base of
yeah,
people who are willing to mow your lawn for cheap prices.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like somebody goes, hey, I'll mow your lawn for $3,000. You go, screw that. I'll do it myself. But
right,
someone says, I'll mow your lawn for $4. And you go sick. I mean, that's what Los Angeles is.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
Well, Damashek makes a great point about Karate Kid. For somebody who is in charge of the pool and the surrounding apartment area of LaRusso's
right,
building, Miyagi, I mean, the pool is a disgrace.
The whole place
was a dump.
What did
Miyagi do all day?
He spent all his time working on his own crap.
Right.
He was a horrible maintenance man.
Terrible.
I mean, he may have been a great sensei and a great mentor, but that's not a guy you'd want looking after your apartment building.
Right.
The pool's a swamp. There's garbage overflowing from the dumpster when Daniel goes to chuck his mountain bike in.
Right.
Meanwhile, Mr. Miyagi's living in a golf course.
With 14 cars.
He's got 14 pristine 1940s vintage Ford trucks. He has origami everywhere. He has bonsai everywhere.
Yeah.
You could eat off the deck. And the apartment he's supposed to be looking after, he's never there.
He could at least skim the pool once a week, I think.
Yeah, then he grabs the kid who lives in the apartment and puts him to work like indentured servitude on his plantation. He doesn't
right,
even have him put anything back into the apartment building.
Right. I would have had Daniel skim the pool once a week, like just out of guilt for how bad of a maintenance job I was doing.
Right. Just a little like chlorine in, chlorine out. You know what I mean? Weave it into the maintenance.
You know, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of that movie next year.
Yeah.
I think we need to reevaluate how much we incorporate it in our everyday lives, because I know I've gone way overboard.
I feel like I've been a little low lately, like I dipped into, it was only, you know, using up about 80% of my conversations
right,
and Karate Kid references in them, so I'm going to try to up it a little
bit. You know
bit,
what's weird though, when you get older, the movies that were in your rotation,
mm-hmm,
it's like your thing about music, how you can only hear a song so many times, you use a word that I can't say on the podcast. You can say it on the radio, I can't say it on the podcast, whatever.
Right.
But
it starts with F.
Right.
And then ends
like
with
Counting
the word
Crows.
F. Yes.
Mr. Jones was the best song they ever made, but nobody can hear it anymore because we heard it too many times. So now like maybe you'd say Rain King was
right,
a more palatable song.
Yes.
But you
it's
know,
like the, when I hear the first three notes of Hotel California, I have to dive onto the radio to change it. Like if I was in my car and Hotel California came on and I went to go change the channel and in my haste broke the knob off, So it was stuck on Hotel California. I'd have to steer into oncoming traffic in order to quiet the silence.
Right.
Shut up. I can't. It's like I can't hear that song ever again.
I think the song from this decade is Hey Yeah by Outkast.
Yeah, I would drive into an oncoming Peterbilt truck in order if I heard that song again. Right. So,
yeah.
But your point was?
Well, my point was with movies, I think the same thing can happen. And, you know, some movies that I really loved and would watch every time they came out.
Don't you dare bring up Point Break. I will leap across the room and strangle you.
I will say, though, that I hadn't delved into Hoosiers in about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And last night it was on. And I got sucked back in, and it was magical. A movie that never disappoints.
Yeah, the only part is bad 80s soundtrack in timeless sports classic. It still has a weird syntho 80s soundtrack that you didn't notice at the time, especially because you get sucked into stuff like, it's also funny, like, I always say this, like, if you look at Westerns from the 50s, everyone had pomade in their hair, and their hair was all slick back, and they look, somehow the guys in 1863 wore their hair exactly like the guys did in 1955.
Right.
And then if you fast forward to like the 70s Westerns, you see the guys with pork chop sideburns and the dry look.
Right.
And all of a sudden the guy's got the 70s, you know, Mr. Brady hair.
Right.
And you're like, wait a minute, it's still 1863, isn't it? You don't notice it because it's the time you're living in and your dad has that hairdo.
Yeah.
Hoosiers, go back and listen to it and watch it. It has a sort of 80s syntho-y soundtrack to it that is not right for the movie.
But that doesn't add to its charm, in your opinion.
No, it takes away from it, but at the time didn't bother you because it was the 80s.
Well, that brings up, you know, I've always argued that we should take some of these great sports movies. We have better technology now, better music, better editing. Like, you take a movie like Rocky.
Right.
Which, when they filmed the climactic fight scene, they filmed it in the Spectrum, and they only put fans in like one part of the arena.
Right.
And if you see some of the close-ups, you see empty seats behind Stallone's head as he's fight. They could easily CGI that and fix some of that stuff, and maybe make his makeup look a little more realistic with the cut over his eye.
Maybe also speed along the first 90 minutes of the movie, because if you watch the first Rocky now, it's like, minute 43, Sly goes to the pet shop.
Right.
Is that, it's a dog?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then,
well, Rocky 2 is like 80 minutes of just zero.
Talia Shire's like got a wool ski beanie pulled over her eyes, and she's just standing there, and they're not doing anything, and then he just walks home slowly. I mean, like, the pacing, and you don't realize how much patience you had back before video games and 5,000 channels and on-demand porn and all this stuff that has sped up your brain 1,000%. Nothing happens in that movie for like the first 90 minutes.
Well, one thing does happen. We can agree that he kind of rapes Adrian.
Yeah.
Was that a rape? Was that a borderline rape? It always bothered me.
It was a dusting of rape. I would call it semi-consensual. Yeah, a date rape.
In 1976, it was foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think we'd have a trial.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. In California,
the rules
for
have
sure.
changed.
Yeah, he would have never been able to get in the ring. He wouldn't have been licensed to fight.
In Rocky II, though, the first... I like the hospital scene a little bit. I like when he goes in and sees Apollo and, Paige, you give me your best. Yeah, I did.
Right.
But really up until through the coma, the excruciating coma in which the audience actually goes into coma as they're watching the coma.
Right.
Until Mickey says, what are we waiting for?
Right.
That movie is terrible. It's unwatchable.
Well, one of the biggest holes in the Rocky scenario, or the Rocky, I don't know what it is now, quadrilogy or whatever, however many they've made. Have we made five now?
Septilogy. Trilogy?
The biggest hole is when he fights Clubber Lang for the second time.
Yeah.
So the first time he fights Clubber Lang and Mr. T just makes short work of him, right?
Right.
Now he's going to go back and he has to work with Apollo and he's got to get fast. He's got to get hungry.
He's got to
get hungry, but he's got to get his speed back.
Yeah.
You know all the homoerotic slow motion stuff where he's on the beach and he's running with Carl Weathers, and then
shots of their packages
just
bouncing
just
up and down.
Slow motion. Yeah. One's going north and south. The other's to and fro. You know, just super slow, oiled up Carl Weathers. You know, striated. Carl Weathers running into the surf, and then the super homoerotic slow motion into the surf, up and down and like hugging. I gotta tell you, I'm not gay, but the point is, after that whole entire thing where it's like, you gotta get fast, you're heavy, you're slow, you're flat footed, get up, dance around, frustrate him, he's not gonna be able to catch you. What happens? The whole thing just resorts back to a slugfest.
Him throwing haymakers.
Where he's throwing haymakers, and Clubber Lang's throwing haymakers, except for this time, for some reason, Rocky's getting punched with the same punches that knocked him out the first fight. He's going, come on, keep it coming, come on. So whatever strategy that he had to employ to beat this guy that's unbeatable, he completely threw out the window, and he just went back to clubbing, and he still got hit. It just, for some reason, it didn't hurt him anymore?
Well, but I think the difference is before the second fight, Adrian gave him the 4-minute speech, which, in my opinion, the best moment of Tally Shire's career.
Mm-hmm.
The, what are we going to lose? What do we have? We got money.
Right.
We got cars.
Right.
And what are you afraid of? I'm afraid!
can I ask you this?
Yeah.
In terms of all these boxing movies, when eventually the guy loses it all?
Yeah.
Couldn't he just live in the house that he grew up in after his folks died? Does he have to move to a slum? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Bill Simmons, right now, you have a beautiful house, beautiful family, everything's lovely. They have the dogs and the gardener and everything. If you lost it all, wouldn't you just move to a modest apartment in Sherman Oaks?
I'd live with my mom.
Would you move to Skid Row? Do you know what I mean? Like, do these guys have to turn into bums? You know, the on Rocky IV when he started training, what's his name with the AIDS?
That's Rocky V.
Rocky V.
Tommy Morrison.
When he started training Tommy the Gun Morrison, or the Duke Morrison, or whatever he's calling himself. Did you have to move into the slums of Philadelphia? Like, you made $2 billion.
Right.
You didn't have a drug problem. You didn't have a gambling problem.
Well, there are two issues, though. First of all, he never took money for the Drago fight in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't about money.
Right.
Secondly, he somehow lost all of his money.
He had a mansion, invested poorly somehow. Yeah, he's driving sports cars.
Yeah.
He has mansions. He has a robot.
Right.
You know, I mean, the guy's living high on the hog.
Yeah.
All right. So a couple investments went bad. Does he have to move to the south side and live under the tracks?
I mean, I could say if you're Mike Tyson and like you run into Robin Givens, she takes half your money. The promoter takes some.
Yes.
You buy too many houses, but Rocky was married to the same person he was married to originally.
So no divorce.
No divorce.
No drugs.
No drugs.
No gambling.
No gambling. No,
they didn't do that storyline where he had the shady brother-in-law who was also his financial manager.
No.
How did he manage to move back to a slum?
No lawsuit where somebody accused him of groping him in an elevator or something. Nothing.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't some Miss Teen USA pageant comes to Philly. And
Rocky gets
drunk.
Well, it really came down to him not accepting money for the Drago fight, because that was probably a $15 million purse.
After the Drago win, wouldn't you have just made enough in endorsements to keep yourself in the mansion, or if not, move to a modest place?
Right.
Do you have to be doing chin-ups on a homemade chin-up bar that's literally made out of galvanized pipe and strung up in your backyard?
Well, does it bother you when TNT does the Rocky? This is one of my all-time pet peeves, and they do the Rocky Marathon.
Yeah.
And they end with Rocky 1 and then go to Rocky 2. But the first 10 minutes of Rocky 2 are the last 10 minutes of Rocky 1.
Yeah, they
should have just watched.
Yeah. Split them up.
And then Rocky 3 is the beginning of Rocky, the end of Rocky 2.
Yeah.
So they just overlap with the things. I would do Rocky 1.
Mm-hmm.
I would run after the first 10 minutes of Rocky 2, which is a repeat of Rocky 1. I would show the hospital scene.
Mm-hmm.
Go right through the coma and just cut to Mickey saying, what are we waiting for?
You know what you ought to do?
And then that'd be it. You could bang out a Rocky Marathon in 4.5 hours, man.
Why bother with that? I think I just came up with a better idea.
Okay.
Look, if Puff Daddy can go ahead and sample Why can't Bill Simmons make his own Rocky movie out of existing Rocky movies?
I have actually already written about this idea.
Oh, yeah.
I think we should.
Frank and Rocky.
Well, here's the thing.
Super Rocky. All the most exciting scenes from all the Rockies. Save us the long jogs along the slums of Philadelphia and the guys singing doo-wop by the burning trash can.
We don't
need all that crap.
I think iTunes is missing out with this because what they should do is you take a movie that you love and you have however many scenes, like 30 scenes. How many scenes was your movie?
How many scenes was my movie?
Yeah, how many, like, real scenes?
Jeez, like I don't know. It's
70?
It's like in the 80s or something.
Okay, so you have, so maybe you have 20 big scenes and 60 small scenes, but you have 80 scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So each of those scenes should be like a song on an album. And if I wanted to make my own album of the movie, so to speak,
right,
I would just pick the 50 scenes I liked from the movie, cut out the other 30, and then download that as my homemade Rocky movie.
I gotta say,
why haven't they done that yet,
Bill? What iPod and what Mac and whoever we're talking about here, they need to tear a page out of the porn book. This is what porn has managed to do for us. Somebody at some point in the mid-80s went, look, instead of just doing these long, dragged-out sagas, let's just make Brawlbusters 57, and it'll be all the best of. And I've not heard any complaints, by the way.
Instead of having 5 minutes where the pizza guy shows up and awkward foreplay holding the pizza box.
It's not like I fired off an angry letter. Where's the story arc? I'm not buying this for a second.
Right.
It's nonstop sex. Give me a break.
Because with Hoosiers, I would make my own Hoosiers movie and just cut out every Barbara Hershey scene, which I've written about a million times. But
I would do that from every movie.
She's the wet blanket girlfriend, and I don't need her. I just want to see the team. I want to see Jimmy Chitwood come back. I don't need the love interest with Norman Dale.
I would cut her out of Beaches while I was at it.
And maybe The Natural.
There's no movie with Barbara Hershey in it that would exist with Barbara Hershey in it when I was done creating my own Frankenstein movie. I agree. Like, I would remove Barbara Hershey from everything and Talia Shire. You're next, baby.
Well, she does. She did have a couple good scenes.
All right. I let a couple from maybe Rocky II.
Well, what about in Rocky IV on the top of the staircase telling Stallone that he can't win?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't win. I mean, and he shoots a look at her like...
I'd put that in there. I'll tell you one
thing. That led to him climbing in the Lamborghini and shifting 37 times.
I would get rid of every scene in Rocky Balboa that involved the frumpy chick who worked at the bar.
Bad casting.
What the hell is he?
Ugly.
Is he into her? Is he not into her?
He did have brain damage.
He's hanging out with her in a van talking about nothing for 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Hey, Marie.
Yeah, it's awful.
She lived in a refrigerator box that was on a set of railroad tracks.
Yeah.
Like, I love this scene, by the way. And I love the scene in any movie. It was the same thing I loved about Con Air when Nick Cage shows up in his, wearing his Green Beret outfit. And they're like, Hey, Gomer, once you get your ass out of this bar, it's like, yeah, that's my strategy. I'm going to go pick on the special forces guy. I love this scene in Rocky Balboa. It's like, hey, champ, not tough enough to buy us a round? You got to probably, that's my strategy.
Yeah.
That's what I like to do. I like to find ex Green Beret guys or heavyweight champions of the world and go mess with them.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows me, like if I'm ever at a bar and I see Larry Holmes at the end, I'm like, hey, fatty. How about you buy us a ring, fat ass? Come on, how about a drink? Come on.
Hey, isn't that Frank Shamrock? Hey,
Frank! Hey, Frank! Yeah, I know. It's like, how about you take your brother Ken and come over here? Because I'm serious. I'm this close to getting off of this bar stool.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like, what did that look like in the script? Hey, how about you buy us a drink, stranger? Hey, no thanks. Oh, now we got a beef.
Yeah.
I got a great idea. Hey, listen, Frank Shamrock, Mike Tyson, and Larry Holmes should be coming out of the bar about the same time. Bill, let's hang out. Wait for him. I got a bone to pick with these guys.
You know who was a really underrated and good example of this was Barkley.
Right.
Barkley used to go out before the NBA players realized that they had to have posses and bodyguards. And these people in Philly would just be like, hey, it's Barkley. I bet I can get into a fight with him.
And then
and
he'd
throwing a guy
him.
Through a window.
Right.
Yeah. But that happened like four or five different times with him.
Right.
And then finally the players were like, all right. You know, and then you pick a fight with the guy and you end up suing the guy and you make
There is a weird
make money.
It's a weird drunken dude fight picking thing, which is you either go for the biggest dude in the bar or the smallest dude in the bar. Now, I don't go for the biggest
Not
dude
the
in the bar.
Guy.
But the guys who get in the fights are the guys that are NBA, you know, Barkley size or the jockeys. The middle of the road guys don't have to worry about trouble because A, people don't know they can kick our ass. They're not sure. It's like the 185-pound guy. You're like,
yeah.
I don't know if that guy's some kind of MMA guy. I don't know. And then, so it's the small guy, we know we can kick their ass. The big guy's like, hey man, this will look pretty good on my resume if I punched out Charles Barkley.
Right.
So they both have something to fear. It's the middle of the road guys. Got no worries.
You know, speaking of, jockeys. I've been thinking about ways to spruce up sports a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
See, take a sport like horse racing.
Right.
We've all accepted that, you know, what would you call jockeys? They're not quite midgets.
I don't know if technically they make it into that.
They're not a midget.
I feel weight-wise they would qualify as
they're
a midget.
They're like anorexic, tiny people.
You know, if you think about it, height should not be the only yardstick we use to measure the midget. It should be weight.
Yeah, if you're a man who's under like 115 pounds,
well, go ahead
you're
and put
something.
You in the midget category.
Yeah, you're something. But I don't understand why normal people, why can't we have horse races?
Manute
Bull
could be a midget.
Manute Bull.
Sorry,
120
Manute.
Pounds.
Horrible news for you.
Yeah, Manute listens every week. I think you just offended him.
Technically, Manute, you do. Now you get a special parking space. It's going to be awesome.
But
yeah,
what
so
about,
I'm sorry.
Well, either normal people or what about like a race where you can only have female jockeys?
Mm.
Like why? These horse races, I think the same thing with tennis. It doesn't have to be the same rules for each race.
Right.
Like if you have whatever the Santa Anita, you know, I know is established, but you take like somebody that's not quite as established as Santa Anita and they have the all female jockeys race
mm-hmm.
where they all like, you have to be like relatively good looking.
Mm.
Yet they look at least as good as Danica Patrick to ride one of the horses. We all went to high school with at least one either pretty hot or really hot girl who rode horses.
And
where are those girls and why can't we make them jockeys and have some sort of race with just like
I'm
hot
with
rich
you.
Chicks?
They
as
all
the jockeys.
They all love horses.
Yeah, and there's that special girl who if she likes horses, it kind of makes her sexier because it's like ooh.
And those chicks jump horses, by the way. They don't go fast in a straight line. They jump over hedges.
Right. So why can't we get them to just race?
Is there? I don't know if your listeners are anything like me, but I got to tell you. Nothing hotter than the horse riding pants.
Yeah.
And then the high boots.
With like the, what kind of shirt? What would you call
blousy,
the shirt? Yeah, it's a blousy,
white, linen-y, blousy
yeah.
thing. Every good 80s movie had the rich daughter come in off the horse.
Right.
And she was with the slob guy.
Yep.
And daddy at some point wanted to buy him off.
Right.
And he never accepted. And by the way, when I was 24, and I was driving a school bus, and I was making $4 an hour, and I was dating your hot daughter. If you would have offered me $100,000 to get lost, I would have been in. By the way, C-A-R-O-L-L-A. A lot of people spell C-R. Thank you. End of movie. I got my $100,000, and I would figure, look, if I could land this chick without the sports car, I'll just take $25,000.
Right.
Get myself a convertible.
That was a great 90210 plot when, Ray Pruitt with one T, the singer.
Right.
Tori Spelling's mom. You know, he's from the wrong side of the track.
Sure.
She wanted to get rid of him. She offered him the check for $10,000 to go away.
Yeah.
And then he tells Tori Spelling, like, your mom offered me this. I didn't take it. I would have been like, Tori. I think I can do better.
Yeah.
You are not attractive.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the $10,000 and I'm gonna call it a night.
We're going to dinner. Good news is I'm buying. Bad news is you're getting dumped. And I feel like the Tori Spelling buy off would have been, I would have been like, oh yeah, I'll do that for $3,500.
Yeah, $10,000 I would have jumped at. There definitely could have been a negotiation down.
Yeah, you Shannon Doherty, that's going to run you.
Right.
Like I'm not tired of her yet.
Well, that's when, you know.
That would have been a different price. Like, if I'm talking to Shannon Doherty's make-believe dad, and he's trying to tell me to hit the bricks, I'm going to be like, we're talking six figures. And I don't mean light six figures, because Shannon Doherty's 21 and hot. Tori, what do you got in the ashtray of your car?
Tiffany Amber Thee's in. I think I would have had to take $200,000.
Right, yeah. No, that's
that
a payday.
That was like, hey, look, we got to negotiate this. You have to call my lawyer.
Tori, the conversation would have been like, look, I want you to stop done and done. We would have worked that Benny Hill joke in where Tori was outraged. She was like, $4,000, and I'd be like, it's all I could afford, baby. You mean you cut my dad a check to leave?
Right. Tori was, you look at her career, and she came along right before the internet really started to take off. Mm-hmm. If she had come along 10 years later, she would have provoked more vitriol on the internet than I think anybody ever. Celebrity,
right.
Terrorist.
Well, it's all...
Women go crazy when Tori Spelling comes on a TV set. They go nuts. They can't handle it.
Well, she has everything that society hates.
Right.
Especially women. Nose job, boob job, whatever else job. So it's sort of fake good luck.
A lot of jobs.
Right, a lot of jobs. Then you cover nepotism. As a society, we can't stand that. Oh, I wonder if daddy, being Aaron Spelling, daddy. It doesn't matter. If your dad owns the team, we hate you.
Right.
Whatever it is, we hate nepotism. We hate all the plastic surgery. And now she can add home wrecker to her list of accomplishments, if you think about it.
Right.
So she went from, like, the doghouse to the outhouse to the hell house, and according to, like, my wife.
Well,
like, she can't stand her anymore.
But I will say, though, it's an ingenious move to put somebody like that on a TV show. And, they're making this new 90210 show.
Really?
Well, yeah, they're doing the remake.
Hold on. I mean, oh. Pray tell.
But they should have the girl on there so the key to Tori's success was that she wasn't attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But she carried herself like she was attractive. She got guys on the show that were much better looking than guys she should have gotten.
Yeah.
And then they would throw in the thing like she designed a dress, but, the fashion model didn't show up. So now Tori's going to have to walk the runway.
Right.
Things that openly antagonized the female viewers. Like, they just couldn't handle, like, oh, my God, she's so ugly. Like, this. And it's actually not a bad dynamic for a show, because women like to complain about other women. Well, so you put this ugly woman on one of their favorite shows, they go nuts.
That's a good point. Like, when you get the chicks together and there's four good friends and only three of them can make it to lunch, guess what the topic is?
Right.
It's what a bitch the fourth one is.
Right. And she's, do you think she's gained weight?
They
do all that stuff.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
They're catty. So they like to snipe rather than, this is why they'll never, this is why there's more females in the United States than there are males, but there'll never be a female president. They actually, they're, 51% or 2% of the populace is females, yet we'll never have a female president because they all hate each other.
Right. Well, that was interesting about the Hillary Clinton thing was that you would have thought she would have crushed the female vote, and it actually wasn't the case.
Right. You guys all hate each other.
Yeah.
And you're bred to hate each other because it's all about competing for Jason Priestley. I mean, ultimately, that's what it's all about. It's who's going to get the priest man's seed. That's all life comes down to, sadly enough. I mean, you really could just distill it down to an episode of 90210. So women all hate each other, so better to make a movie or make a show with a central character that women hate, because my wife and I watch the Tori and Dean show last weekend, and it was 1 hour of my wife bitching about Tori Spelling,
right?
Preceded by another episode and another episode and another.
And she probably enjoyed herself.
Yeah, it's weird, because a guy wouldn't do that. If a guy really didn't like a show or he didn't really like the character, he just wouldn't watch. He wouldn't sit there and bitch about it for five episodes.
Well, while we're on that subject, have you seen The Two Corys?
I've not seen the show yet.
I was out on the first season because I thought it was obviously scripted and staged. But then something happened and they stopped scripting them as much. Mm. Season two is magnificent. And it's on demand. And Corey Haim is, He's unprecedented.
Corey.
But you're rooting for him to kill himself. Well, that's how much of a waste of life he is.
And Feldman may, pound for pound, be one of the biggest blowhards on the planet. And again, you know, when you do blowhard, you have to have categories. Like, Tyra Banks is the biggest female blowhard of color.
Right.
I mean, she's not the biggest blowhard, but she certainly takes
the minority
it
blowhard. Minority
female
blowhard.
She takes it in that category. Feldman may be pound for pound in the under 100, you know, under 200 pounds, because the fatter you are, the easier it is to be a blowhard. You know?
Right.
And the under 150 pound weight class and under 40 years of age weight class may hold the belt. He may hold all three of the belts.
And definitely the D-list celebrity belt.
Mm.
In the beginning of the show, you love this, in the credits, they have the little, you know, the opening sequence for each show with the, and it's, they're talking about each other, and Feldman's like, dream a little dream, Lost Boys, we were unstoppable.
Yeah.
Well, I was watching two of my buddies that last weekend, and we were like, you know what stopped you? The box office.
Right.
The ticket receipts.
Yeah, like Lost Boys is over at the Smithsonian next to Archie Bunker's chair.
Dream a Little Dream. Like, that was like a real movie.
Oh, I just got the Criteria collection of Dream a Little Dream. We just watched a box set of that. Yeah, like what?
Well, that's
like anyone's talking about this stuff anymore?
This season, too, is about how they're making Lost Boys 2, and it's going to be like this turning point or this rejuvenation of their careers, basically. Lost Boys 1, I don't even know if I'd put in the top, like, 50 80s movies.
No.
Like, would you watch it when it's on? I wouldn't.
No.
It's not rewatchable, I don't think.
Well, you know all Lost Boys is? Lost Boys is you had to be between the ages of 13 and 17 when it came out.
Right.
Otherwise, you don't enjoy it. There's no person over 40 that remembers or likes it, and there's no person under 25. It'd be right there in this weird little sweet spot in order for it to speak to you.
And willing to overlook the gay overtones throughout the movie, because it was,
yes.
I don't know what was going on with the Lost Boys, but it was definitely
lingering
all over the place.
A lot of guys wearing eyeliner, you know, hugging.
You know what's an interesting thing, though, about, I was thinking about how the 80s movies have shaped my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at a movie like, what was the Robert Downey? Less Than Zero?
Oh, yes.
I've been
watching the hell out of that lately.
Yeah, it's on. It's really good. It's surprisingly decent. I like the part when McCarthy and Spade are getting one of those classic 80s fights where he's got the two henchmen.
Yeah.
So it's the two henchmen for the bad guy.
Yeah, and the bad guy is always a good-looking guy who's just a bad guy.
Always blonde. Blonde meant you're evil. I think there was some World War II carryover with that.
And I liked it when Spade started forcing Downey to turn tricks.
Right.
That'd be a nice little moment for Downey when he got the script. Like, let's see, what do we have here? High school. Nailing, what's her name?
Jamie Gertz.
Nice, yeah. Sweet. That's what I, running a club. I like, page 37 turned up. Holy, what the?
Getting up from somebody's lap?
What the hell? Yeah.
Well, but my point is that movie combined with Len Bias put the fear of God in me with cocaine.
Yeah.
I either thought I would drop dead like Len Bias did, or I would be turning male tricks as a male prostitute because I owed money to a coke dealer. Those were my two options if I did coke.
For me, it was, in no particular order, Len Bias, Less Than Zero, and then me making $7 an hour doing construction labor and coke being $120 a gram. Like, literally. So let me get this straight. I can dig ditches for 9 hours in the San Fernando Valley and you essentially crush up one aspirin and I can buy that.
Yeah.
Give me the booze.
Yeah, I'm going to pass.
By the way,
drink beers.
I'm going to liquor store. I'm going to pick up some Mickey's. Anyone else need anything?
I get the 30-pack for $6.99.
That's right.
I'm going to go with that.
Strohs or Natural Light? I'm going with the 30-pack.
Did you do the Natty Lights back then?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's when I did. For me, I wish it was a more noble cause, but it was more like I just did the, you know, bang for your buck. I'm making $7 an hour.
Right.
I ain't Don Johnson over here. give me the booze.
Yeah, the Natty Lights, I think, had a profound effect on people in the 80s. But
well, if Robert Downey's character had been into the Natural Lights rather than the Booger Sugar,
nobody would have.
He wouldn't have had to turn tricks.
Well, that is true.
I did not have to turn barely any tricks. I mean, a handful of tricks were turned to get, you know, some Natty Light, you know, any port in a storm. But, I mean, not what Downey had to do in, yeah.
What other, can you think of any other 80s movies that, where you learn life lessons in your formative years?
Well, Breaking Away, which is one of my favorite movies. Not a bad movie, but I
kind of the
that
Cutters were a little symbolic of your relationship with your high school friends, I would say.
Right.
A little bit.
A lot of them went off to college. Yeah. We stayed back and worked the quarries of North Hollywood. Yeah. Learned a little lesson about hard work and, you know, camaraderie and sticking together. That was a good movie.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Underrated, by the way.
Couldn't agree more.
Doesn't land into most people's top 10.
You know what's interesting about Breaking Away and then American Flyers? Like, you look at, like, the amount of baseball movies that have been made and how crappy most of them are. Like, you make a baseball movie, it's like maybe a 12% success rate.
Right.
Basketball is maybe like 20%.
Mm.
It's been two bicycling movies.
Mm.
Breaking Away, American Flyers, two classics.
Well,
I love American Flyers.
I don't want to crap on your theory, and maybe I'm bolstering your point here, but I got two words for you, my brother. Quicksilver.
Oh, you bolstered it. Three for three. There you go. You proved my point.
Oh, man, I could watch that movie all day long.
Do your spiel about bacon.
I don't know
if we've done this on the podcast.
What was my bacon spiel.
I thought that you
bacon
had a whole
spiel sounds like an instrument. What do you play in the Philharmonic? The bacon spiel?
You had your whole thing about how he gives up.
Well, he did that thing he did that thing that every 80s movie had as a central theme, which is he was the best. It's
right.
Eddie and the Cruisers kind of thing.
Yeah.
He was on top and he gave it all up. For some.
And he was the best, but there was no evidence that he was the best. It's just everybody felt that he was the best.
He was freaked out because he was a great Wall Street trader. He took his dad's nest egg and he squandered the whole thing.
That's right. That's what it was.
And by the way.
But that led to you used to be the best. That led to that scene.
Right. But let me just explain something to anyone listening who's planning on squandering their dad's nest egg. Best thing you can do for dad is go ahead and get it back doing your super high paying job.
Right.
Not quitting it and becoming a bicycle messenger.
In New York City.
If my kid squanders my nest egg and then says I'm going to drop out and hang out with a bunch of flunkies for $4 an hour, I'm going to be like, listen, kid, how about you head back to Wall Street and see if you make some of my nest egg back?
Yeah, the guys from Bear Stearns are not currently bike messengers.
No.
They're trying to get a job at Morgan Stanley.
They're looking for a new six-figure gig.
Yeah.
They're not being a bike messenger.
There was also the only scene ever the only seduction scene ever that involved a bicycle in that movie.
That's right. He rode around the apartment with his hot ballerina girlfriend.
Yeah.
That was a total 80s scene. And what's her name from Lesson Zero? Jamie Gertz was in that too, let's not forget.
Right.
As the runaway newbie to the bike messenger scene.
I still think the defining 80s scene of all time, like if you took scenes that for whatever reason we were okay with and didn't totally question the 80s, but now when you look back and you think, oh my God, like, how did that happen? How did we not make fun of that when it happened? Kevin Bacon
I'm
going to
tease it. You're never going to top my scene, but go ahead.
Kevin Bacon, frustrated by the fact that he can't dance in Footloose.
Mm-hmm.
The town won't allow the dancing. Goes to the abandoned warehouse
and
has
warehouse.
The crazy, I'm letting it all out, dance scene.
Yes, a cathartic dance scene.
Yeah. Would never in a million years happen in 2008. Could never happen.
Also,
he laughed out of the theater.
He did what they did in like 30 80s movies, which is you just start using pipes and heating ducts as makeshift Olympic apparatus. It was like you use an old tractor as a pommel horse.
Right.
It was like a Gymkhana or something. Like in 80s movies, you jump on a fire sprinkler line, you do a couple of pirouettes off that and a full
never
dismount.
Broke.
Yeah, it never comes popping off the ceiling. You would get tetanus in a second, by the way, if you just went to an old warehouse and started diving around.
What's your scene?
Okay. The best and worst simultaneously. Maybe not the quintessential 80s scene, but the best. And please go out. A lot of people don't remember this scene. They can't remember it. They blocked it out of their mind because it was a solid movie. Gremlins. When Phoebe Cates explains to Zach What's-His-Nose why she doesn't like Christmas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Please go get Gremlins just to see the scene.
We'll recap it for us.
Zach What's-His-Nose.
Zach Gaffigan or something.
Yes.
Gilligan. Zach Gilligan.
Something.
Gallagher.
Zach never work again.
Yeah.
Zach never act again he's confused as to why Phoebe Cates' character is so anti-Christmas.
Yeah.
She can't stand Christmas, has a beef with Christmas, and he can't get to the bottom of it. And finally, as they're walking home on Christmas Eve, it's a snowy night, they stop and he says, "What is it with you and Christmas?" And then the music starts swelling and she said, "When I was 9 years old, my father said, he was going outside to go pick up a pack of cigarettes, and he never came back. And Christmas came, and Christmas went, and New Year's came, and New Year's went. We could never find him, and we never heard from him. And then we noticed a smell coming from the chimney." And they did that scene, by the way, where the gremlin did a... They did like a tough, as if that little creature somehow knew there was like the foreboding music, what was happening.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Whoo." And he's like, "I like the creatures, by the way. They don't speak English, but they understand it through their noises, you know, like, hey, that's funny."
Yeah
like the gopher and Caddyshack. Curious George does it too. Yeah. I don't know if your kids have picked up
of
on
course.
This, but the point is even the little thing, like, "Oh," and he's like, she's like, "And there was a smell coming from the chimney, and we thought it was a bird or a squirrel that got stuck in there. And the firemen came and they broke it out. And it was my dad's rotting corpse. He was in a Santa outfit. He'd come down to surprise us. And it's in the middle of the comedy and I want to kill myself.
Right.
I mean, the movie is a comedy. By the way, she could have just said, "I'm half Jewish. I don't really like Christmas," or whatever. But no, she had to say that her dad got in a Santa outfit, went to the roof. And by the way, if anyone's actually seen the flue inside the chimney, you can barely get your fist into it.
Yeah, nobody's ever.
Much less the fire shelf at the bottom that's all the 4 inches wide.
Right.
Like, you just physically can't do it. Had to get the Santa outfit, was going to drop down at night after they went to bed. Who are you surprising? You know what I mean? I mean, leave the cookies for Santa, and then you take a bite out of one of them, and you drink some of the milk. Fireman busted out her dad's rotting corpse from the chimney. That's why she hates Christmas.
In a comedy.
I understand when you're writing a movie, you need a reason why the central character doesn't like Christmas. Say I got, I had the flu 1 year, never stopped vomiting, and I always associate Christmas with vomiting, or my parents got divorced on Christmas.
Yeah.
Really, your dad's rotting corpse had to be busted out of the chimney by the fire department.
Well, if you take it a step further, how would he surprise the family coming down the chimney? They'd all have to be in the living room.
They'd have to all be standing
they would
staring
hear him.
At a fire.
Well, they would all hear him, this fat guy coming down the chimney.
And they put the math together pretty quick, because you'd be like, "Dad, come in here. You gotta, Dad, where's the, oh, Dad.
Yeah.
Take the beard off."
Yeah. Dad came down the chimney again.
And by the way, I don't know how he had slipped, evidently broke his neck, and his corpse was rotting. They literally smelled Dad's corpse coming from the chimney.
Mm.
Yeah. That's how Phoebe Cates found out.
In her defense, I probably would hate Christmas too if that was my...
I feel like with the relationship I have with my dad, I would have taken a Christmas off. And then, you know, kind of got back
the
on that Christmas.
Thing.
Yeah.
You got to talk about celebrity softball games. Sorry to switch gears, but we have to get into this before this goes 5 hours.
Yeah.
Last celebrity game, Yankee Stadium. First of all, why didn't you play Yankee Stadium? That seemed like it would have been right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I don't know. I was not invited.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you had connections.
I play in the Dodger one every year, but I never play. And I played in the Chicago one a couple years back.
Come on, you were there were guys in that celebrity game I'd never even heard of.
Well,
even somebody who wasn't your fan has at least heard of you.
Yeah, I don't know. The invitation got lost in the mail. I watched it though, and I watched Chris Rock strike out two times in a row. And by the way,
impossible.
He didn't line out. He struck out. And he did it two times, and he did it swinging, and that was it. And it wasn't one of those things where you catch a piece of it and the catcher catches it, you know, foul tip into the catcher's mitt for the last time, or check swing and the third base coach punches you out.
Yeah.
No. Or third base umpire. He literally just whiffed, like six pitches.
And not in a game where, you know, like a competitive slow pitch game where the guys throw the ball 25 feet in the air.
No, not
the guys showing you the ball.
Not unlimited arc, not crazy doing the underhand at 80 miles an hour and blowing John Kruk off the plate. None of that. Literally, Catfish Hunter holding the ball up, by the way. No more condescending move you can do from the mound than hold the ball up.
Right.
You see this?
Yeah.
You must hit this object. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's like I have a 2-year-old, and when I play catch with him, I do that same move. See this?
Yeah.
See this? See this? Here, up. And then it just hits him right in the forehead and hits the ground. He doesn't move his arms. But either way, I give him the here it comes, here it comes.
Yeah.
He gave Chris the here it comes, threw him two lollipops, and I mean, consecutive lollipops, two trips to the plate, K'd both times. And the only thing, and so you think to yourself, what could be worse than this? Because there could be nothing worse. A, you're in New York, so you got the New York fans.
Right.
B, there's 40,000 of them. C, you just whiffed twice in a underhand softball game where you're literally playing with like 70-year-old Billy Crystal's punching him, you know, into right field.
Rye Fingers is 60.
Right. He literally has a colostomy bag he's dragging around the bases with him, and yet he still managed to put the ball in play. The only thing worse is, I swear to you, one of the Ollie twins comes up next, or one of the blondes from The Girls Next Door.
Oh, yeah, Kendra.
Like literally Kendra comes up and lines one to center field. Next base clearing right after you. I mean, you got to think about it. The only thing worse than you whiffing at a celebrity softball game is one of Hef's girlfriends coming in and you know, hitting a frozen rope.
Or Jenna Jameson.
Jenna Jameson drives one to the alley right after, and you're still walking back to the dugout. First pitch, dude, just drives it right into a power alley.
The funny thing about the Chris Rock strikeout was that if it had happened once, we still would be talking about it for 50 minutes. Like, can you believe Chris Rock struck out in the, but that, for it to happen twice, like, I feel like.
Well, I admire the man. There's parts of me that admire the man.
Does Marley Matlin strike out twice?
No, Marley Matlin hits for the cycle. I mean, she's literally up after him and hitting. I mean, she playing the game and she hits. There is a funny thing. This is an interesting thing.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Softball versus golf. Guys that play well, like my agent is probably like a 6-handicap golfer. And we all know that one guy is a really good golfer.
Your agent, Baby Doll James Dixon.
James Baby Doll Dixon. Yeah. Right, right. We all know guys. We all know like two guys are good golfers, right? Yeah. What do? When you ask you, hey, you play any golf? I'm a little bit on the weekends. Are you good at golf? I wouldn't say good. I'm a duffer. I get by. You know, then somebody chimes in and goes, he shot a 74 last week over at Palmdale. You know, like somebody, they don't brag about softball. Exact opposite. I've worked with guys that have been like, oh yeah, oh no, great glove. Great, oh no, good power. And then
you brag about it.
Then you finally, well, I'm good. The point is you then see these guys out there and they're horrible.
Right.
Now, softball is the one sport that people think they can play when they can't play.
Interesting.
People don't think that about boxing. They don't think it about football. They don't think it about hoops. They certainly don't think it about golf. When a guy's bad at golf, he knows he's bad at golf.
Right.
Chris Rock is so bad at softball that in a underhand slow pitch game, he manages to strike out two times in a row.
Yep.
He thinks when he's on the way to the stadium, oh, I'm going to get a couple of hits today.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know he's bad. If you know when you're bad at boxing, you don't get in the ring. You know what I'm saying?
I would argue basketball might fall into that category.
There are hands.
Because when we used to play at your old house,
yeah.
There were a couple guys who showed up, whoever is like, oh, this guy's good, watch it. And then they were terrible.
They're those guys. They're also the guys who know they're bad, and their only way to deal with them being bad is to panic and shoot.
Right.
Which is always my, hey, Meadowlark, perhaps the running hook from way past the three-point stripe is not a great strategy for a guy who has zero game.
Right.
The crazy panic running hook from 33 feet away, like, okay, you're bad. Fine.
You know what? Usually what happens is they settle into just bombing threes.
Right.
Because if one of them goes in, it's like, oh, hey, you made a three.
Pass the ball off. All I'm saying about Chris Rock is, I assume Chris Rock knows he's not Wade Boggs. Shouldn't he either not play in the celebrity game or get his assistant to lob him a bucket of balls or two, you know, before he hits?
That is the problem with softball, though, is because you might have been good at it at some point. But like if you hit me grounders right now, and I used to have a really good glove. If you hit me grounders right now, I'd probably miss all of them just because I haven't done it in so long.
I admit,
it's almost like relearning how to do it.
The glove will go, but the bat
shouldn't go unless you have a back problem or something.
Making contact with the ball.
No, you should be able.
Like
to make
I don't
contact.
Think it's physically possible for us to miss a softball someone lobbed it to you.
Do you think this affects the way you remember his career?
For me, it's tainted. I kind of agree too. I remember him as the guy who made a bunch of bad movies and then struck out at the softball celebrity game.
I don't think anybody has made, well, actually Eddie Murphy, I think, but somebody who has had more bombs and more huge hits. Like Chris Rock's HBO show was great.
Yeah.
His three HBO specials, the first two were great. Second one was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then every movie he's ever made.
I'm sorry, I'm blowing up. Yeah, I'll tell
every
you.
Movie he's ever made has been unwatchable.
I'll tell you who right now. Richard Pryor.
Oh, that's
Richard Pryor is arguably the biggest name and the greatest legend in stand-up history.
Yeah.
Has made horrible movies.
With the exception of like two.
Moving, Busting Loose.
Right.
The Toy, even Brewster's Millions.
The Toy was his lowest one, though.
I got to tell you, go back and watch Busting Loose or Moving or one of these things. I mean, he is arguably, for the world's funniest stand-up, hasn't made a movie that, you know, his Rotten Tomato count would average like a 14.
Well, what about poor Eddie Murphy? Like, if he was a baseball player through 10 years, his lifetime average is like, he's hitting 370.
Right.
With like, you know, 420 homers and whatever. And now he's probably below 300.
He is.
He's at like 280 now.
He's really like the Daryl Strawberry of comedians.
Doc Gooden.
Like,
yeah.
Here's a guy who averages more dingers in his first 500 trips to the plate than anyone in the league. And he's eating beans out of a can somewhere.
Do you think, like somebody like Eddie Murphy, like I'm convinced when you become that successful, you stop hanging out with normal people
and you become
isolated in whatever giant mansion you live. How do you continue to be funny if you're not around anybody?
I have one word for you. Ray. My buddy Ray.
Right.
I should rent him out to celebrities.
To bust their balls and kind of keep them real.
Even the ones that like, hey man, look at these new snakeskin boots I got. What do you think? Oh, I'm awesome. It looks awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm thinking about going with a tat. It's a tribal tat. It's a Iroquois word meaning courage. And like my buddy Ray would immediately get in and shut all that down. Hey, listen, I'm not going out with any gay rodeo clowns. Leave the boots at home, huh?
It is true.
Right?
But do you
need the friends from the old neighborhood. The day I decide to start, you know, getting the tattoos and get the skull, you know, the day I start dressing like I was in Poison in 1988 or something like that. My buddy Ray will immediately put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, you could tell Eddie's friends had lost control when he filmed Raw, and he was wearing one of those Michael Jackson leather suits.
He's wearing a purple.
None of his friends like threw their body in front of that. That's when the wheels came off.
Yeah, when you start wearing boots that zip up on the side and are made out of the same leather as your pants,
right?
That means it's time for a Ray intervention.
But, you know, if somebody's making a lot of money, the guy's friends all go on the payroll.
That's what happens.
If you were making, I don't know, let's say you became the next Stern. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you're pulling down $30 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you hire would you pay Ray $50,000 a year to start your cars every morning?
Well, hey, by the way, Stern would be pissed if he was just making $30 million a year.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't mean to insult Stern.
Ready to take that kind of pay cut?
Right.
No. I have had enough money and made enough money to assemble a very small posse, and I shan't do that.
Well, see, I read about these NBA players that, like, they live with their five best friends from high school in their gigantic mansion of wherever.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like if I was making that kind of cash,
mm-hmm.
I think I would want some of my friends to live with me. Like, assuming they, you know, the issue is that none of these guys obviously have any better offers.
Right.
My friends have jobs.
Right.
But if I was making $20 million a year and I could convince my three best friends from high school and two of my best friends from college to just move in with me, and we'd get girls every night and we'd watch TV and make fun of TV, I can't kill these guys for that, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, little Charlie Sheen from 2.5 Men action. But eventually, here's what happens. Eventually, you start getting, you don't leave well enough alone. Like, you and your buddies move in, you're getting laid, you're having a great time, you're drinking the Nat Light, you're watching Sports Center on the big screen, everything's going great, and then you go, hey, I got an awesome idea. You know what's missing? Some handguns and a Bengal tiger. You know what I mean? You don't leave it alone.
Yeah.
You just don't leave it alone. You're living like you're an entourage, but you have to keep going. That's when the trouble starts.
Well, I was just going to say, Entourage was a great example of, I think we all really liked the first season of Entourage. I thought it was a little flawed, but
sure.
I really liked the premise of this guy who just lived with his boys and we didn't have to worry about him running out of money or all these TV ploys they do where,
right.
You know, this guy, this thing happened, this thing. They just kind of enjoyed life, and that's right. Why we liked it. It was a low-pressure show. And the next couple seasons roll around. All of a sudden, you know, he's having problems with his agent. He's running out of money. Like, the one reason I liked the show, they got away from.
Yeah, they try to make it real. It's the same thing they do with sitcoms.
Right.
It's like, season one, it's a couple of nutty neighbors going at it, and the laughs never stop. Then you get to season seven, and it's like they're tackling a bulimia.
Yeah,
and you're
right.
Like, what happened? On a very special AIDS-ridden version of Too Close for Comfort or something. Yeah. And you're like, what the?
Yeah.
That's a sitcom. Do we really need to tackle breast cancer here?
Or the other thing they'll do is somebody will have a baby.
Right.
And they'll go through that, and look, you know, I love my kids. I love being a dad, but it's not really exciting to be a parent. And I don't need parenting in my sitcom.
Let's face it. I swear to God, every time I see a good episode, season one of Entourage, I want to get divorced. I'm like, Kimmel and Simmons all living in this beautiful hacienda up in the hills, hitting golf balls into our neighbor's house.
Our buddy Jimmy is newly single.
Oh, no.
For the first time since he was like 18 years old and weighed 110 pounds.
Me, you, and Kimmel out on the town with a big fat wallet full of money and a sports car. Come on, ladies. We're heading up to the house.
What do you see his dating future?
Let's see.
Or is this a subject that he'll get mad about if we discuss?
Oh, if you think about Jimmy, he gets mad.
Yes. He's sending me an angry email right now.
Yeah.
Leave me out of your podcast. I feel like we can't lose either way because I loved his old girlfriend. If they got back together, I'd be delighted.
Oh, yeah.
I would love for them to get back together, but if this led to like us being over at his house with, you know, watching football and like 11:30 in the morning
in our underpants,
all of a sudden Terry Hatcher comes down the stairs and just these random weird celebrities, I would not, you know, Yeah. It would at least be an interesting wrinkle for the 2000. Much more interesting than Brett Favre's comeback, in my opinion.
Nia Vardalos, I could use another natural light.
All right, plug the hammer. DVD is out. It's been out for 2 weeks.
Out as we speak, and here's what I would love. I would love your army, who loves sports, loves comedy, and loves our brand of humor,
yeah,
to see this movie. And seeing as how you're probably listening to us somewhere near a computer, just go to Amazon,
yeah,
and check out the 5-star rating.
Mm.
Go to Amazon, read some of the reviews, and if it's anything below 5 stars, and it's not, then you don't have to get it. But if so, go to Amazon and pick it up. Because you know what's really cool? If you get your movie out on Amazon, they have bestsellers. And you'll see it fall down the list. You'll see it go up the list and be like, ah, Burn Zone.
Yeah.
Damn them. They're beating me out.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, 30-minute shred, Rock Hard Abs has just jumped ahead of our humble indie comedy.
Yeah.
But if you guys hop on Amazon and buy it, I can watch it go back up and beat the crap out of Burn Zone.
It's amazing how competitive that stuff gets.
Yeah.
When I was doing when my book came out, and I was like right on the fringe, I was in the extended bestseller, I was right on the fringe of making a bestseller. Freaking Bill Romanowski comes out with his book that has the media blitz, so for 1 week he made it ahead of me.
Right, the guy's on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, about what a bad guy, I was a bad guy, I did steroids, like this guy's just a scumbag, and he knocks me down a spot. I already hated him, now I wish horrible things would happen to him.
Well,
but anyway, your DVD, you got a director's commentary on there.
Yeah.
Deleted scenes?
Yeah, deleted scenes, director's commentary, all the good stuff. Yeah, me and Kevin Hench do
right.
The commentary.
My buddy Hench.
People seem to enjoy it quite a bit, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, deleted scenes, extras, the whole nine yards. But you get a movie that got 2 thumbs up. From At the Movies with Richard Roper.
One of their last thumbs up before
one of the last
middle fingers.
Recommendations, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many comedies do they review where both guys go see it?
Well, I said it before on a previous podcast. I'll say it again. It's a date movie.
Yeah.
It's got enough stuff for guys. It's got enough stuff for girls. You somehow had a girlfriend that wasn't a wet blanket sports movie girlfriend. Actually a likable character.
Right.
It's funny. At the very least, it's a $4 rental.
At least.
I mean, for the love of God.
Absolutely.
Spend $15, it'll be great on the DVD, you get the commentary, you get all that stuff, but at the very least, rent it. 2 hours.
If you rent it, you'll buy it. That's what I say.
The sales
have
been pretty good?
Go ahead and rent it. Yeah, the sales have been good. We've been in the block. We've been rented out at a lot of Blockbusters. We've been tagged as a recommendation at a lot of Blockbusters because people have been giving it real positive feedback. We have 5 stars over at Amazon. We've been in the bestseller 100 list for like 3 weeks now. So let's keep it there, kiddies.
Yeah, it's pretty. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can use the DVD as a coaster.
I will tell you this. If you don't think it's above an 8, I will give you your money back.
And your radio show, you do the podcast now for the radio show, right? You can hear any of the whatevers.
You can go to adamcarolla.com and hear every single thing that comes out of my mouth every single day in the morning. And you can go to Amazon and get the hammer.
And the Post Bonaduce air has been pleasant.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. All right. All right. I'm glad you're doing well, buddy.
Good times.
Talk to you later.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.